Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
Good to be here.
Today, we're looking into the Afrin district of Syria, specifically how it was before 2010, based on the research materials you've shared with us.
That's right. The goal isn't just listing facts, but really trying to understand the unique feel of the region before all the major changes.
Exactly. We'll be exploring its geography, the history, its very diverse communities, and the economic life that really defined it back then.
And the sources paint a really fascinating picture, you know, from ancient sites right up to this mix of Kurdish, Yazidi, Alevi, Christian, Arab, and Turkmen villages.
It sounds incredibly rich.
Yeah.
So let's start to unpack what made pre-2010 Afrin so distinctive. Where should we begin? Geography.
Geography makes sense. So Afrin district, it's in northwestern Syria, part of the Aleppo governorate.
Okay.
And the landscape is really dominated by the Kurd mountains.
Right.
But cutting through that is the Afrin River Valley, which is, well, incredibly fertile and absolutely key for agriculture.
And the olive groves, the sources really emphasize those, just vast groves.
Oh, absolutely. Olives were central. And what's really interesting geographically is the border situation.
How so?
Well, after the Hatay region was annexed by Turkey in 1939, Afrin found itself almost completely encircled by the Syrian-Turkish border.
Wow, nearly surrounded.
Exactly. And this wasn't just a line on a map. It seems to have really forged a stronger sense of local identity and self-reliance, especially around olive production.
So being geographically distinct helped preserve its character.
It seems likely, yes. This focus on olives, the local economy, it probably helped buffer the region against the central government's Arabization policies later on, made it maybe less permeable.
I see. And connections to the rest of Syria were limited then?
Somewhat, yeah. Mainly east towards Azaz and southeast towards Mount Simeon. Not wide open connections.
Okay, so a geographically defined area, fostering its own unique path. Mm. Let's turn to the history now. The sources suggest it goes way back.
It really does. We're talking evidence of people living there right back in the Neolithic period.
Incredible.
And you have truly significant ancient sites like Ain Dara. That's a Syro-Hittite temple complex.
That's for Hittite.
Yeah, it's sort of cultures that emerged after the Hittite Empire collapsed, blending traditions. Ain Dara dates roughly from 1300 down to about 740 BC.
And the notes mention a possible connection to Solomon's temple. That sounds intriguing.
It is. There are architectural and iconographic similarities noted by archaeologists.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Ain Dara actually predates the time attributed to Solomon's temple.
Fascinating. So layers upon layers of history. What came after?
Well, you see the usual succession of empires, Roman, Byzantine, various Islamic caliphates, then the Ottomans.
Right.
But also, and this is crucial, a very long-standing Kurdish presence in the Kurdah. Some sources suggest maybe even back to the Seleucid era.
That far back.
Potentially. And by the 16th century, you have European travelers mentioning Kurds, likely Yazidi Kurds living in those mountains.
So a continuous presence through all those shifts.
Hmm.
Then the French mandate.
Correct. After World War I, the whole map changed. Afrin was detached from Kilis, which became part of Turkey, and it was formally incorporated into French mandate Syria.
And Afrin town itself.
It started as a marketplace in the 19th century, but really developed more under the French administration, became more of a center.
Okay. Then Syria gains independence in 46, and we see these Arabization policies mentioned. How did they play out in Afrin?
Yeah, after independence, the Syrian state implemented policies aimed at, well, Arabizing areas with large Kurdish populations. Afrin was one of them.
So things like changing place names.
Exactly. The historic name Kurdah, Kurd Mountains, was officially changed to Afrin District in 1952. But despite these efforts,
yes,
Afrin was still widely considered the least Arabized, the most sort of homogeneously Kurdish of Syria's Kurdish regions, right up to 2010.
That's remarkable. Why do you think it resisted that pressure so effectively?
It's likely a combination of factors. The geography we talked about, that long history of settlement, maybe strong local social structures, all contributing to a really resilient cultural identity.
So state policy met strong local persistence. Let's look at how the district was actually run, the administration, and the main places people lived.
Okay. Administratively, it was part of the Aleppo governorate. The district boundaries as they were pre-2010 were largely set in the 1960s.
And Afrin City was the center.
Yes, Afrin City was the administrative hub. Now, population figures. The 2004 census is probably the most reliable baseline. It recorded just over 172,000 people in the district.
Okay, 172,000 in 2004. The notes also mentioned a much higher figure, over half a million for 2010.
Yeah, that 523,000 figure. It's out there, but it likely includes surrounding areas or use different counting methods. The 172,000 for the district itself in 2004 seems more solid for our baseline.
Got it. And what about how things worked on the ground? Formal government versus local ways.
That's an interesting point. It seems there was the formal state administration, but alongside it, potentially quite strong informal traditional social structures within the villages tied to that Kurdish identity.
And the village names reflect that too.
Definitely. You see the official Arabized names, but Kurdish names persisted in common use. It shows that tension, you know?
Yeah.
State versus local reality.
And tribal ties were weaker here than elsewhere.
Reportedly so, yes. Yeah. Compared to some other Kurdish regions in Syria or Iraq, tribal affiliations seemed less dominant in Afrin's social structure, maybe more village or regional identity.
Interesting. And the district itself was divided further into sub-districts.
Yes, seven of them. They're called Nahis. You had Afrin's sub-district, Bulbul, Jinnayers, Raho, Sharan, Sheikh Al-Hadid, and Mabatli.
Seven. And they varied quite a bit.
They did, yeah. In size, population, number of villages, each had its own sort of micro-regional character.
Can we quickly touch on each one? Afrin sub-district, obviously including the main city.
Right. Largest population, over 66,000 in 2004. Somewhere between, say, 40 and 60 villages reported, depending on the source.
Okay. Bulbul.
Bulbul sub-district, centered on Bulbul town. Smaller population, maybe 12,500 in the town itself, but a fair number of villages, 30 to 50 or so.
And Jindyres. We'll come back to the town, but the sub-district.
Jindyres sub-district, yeah. Around Jindyres town, population close to 33,000 in 2004, about 56 villages listed.
Raho.
Raho sub-district, centered on Raho town, also quite populated, nearly 22,000, and a high number of settlement sources say 53 to 65 villages and farms.
Then Sharan and Sheikh Al-Hadid.
Sharan, centered on its town, population over 13,000, around 44 villages. Sheikh Al-Hadid, similar population, almost 14,000 in its town-centered sub-district, but fewer villages, maybe 16 to 18. Suggest denser settlements, perhaps.
And the last one, Mabatli.
Mabatli sub-district, centered on Mabatli town, population close to 12,000 with about 42 villages. And significantly, this was a major center for the Alevi community.
We'll definitely come back to the Alevis. So these sub-district centers were like local hubs.
Exactly. Local economic points, social gathering places for the surrounding villages.
Okay, let's zoom in on the two main towns then, Afrin City and Jindyres. Afrin City, administrative capital, economic driver.
Absolutely. It was the primary urban center. Grew from that 19th century market, expanded under the French. Over 36,000 people just in the city in 2004.
And central to the economy.
Hugely, especially the olive oil industry, and by extension, Aleppo soap production. It had really strong commercial ties with Aleppo City.
And tourism, too.
Yes, domestic tourism. People came for the scenic landscapes, the mountains, the river valley. It had a reputation for that.
So a modern economic center with natural appeal. What about Jindyres? You mentioned its history.
Jindyres is fascinating. Second largest town, population over 13,000 in 2004. But its significance is really historical. It's the site of the ancient town of Jindyres.
Jindyres. Hellenistic. Roman.
Both.
Yep.
Goes back to the Hellenistic period. It was strategically important. Site of a major Roman battle in 38 BC, the Battle of Mount Jindyres. And later, it became an important Christian center, an episcopal see, meaning it had its own bishop.
It remained Kurdish.
Even in the 19th century, European visitors described it as a Kurdish settlement, so it kept that identity.
So you have this contrast within the district.
Mm-hmm.
Afrin, the bustling modern hub, and Jindyres, steeped in ancient history.
Exactly. It really shows the different layers of the region's character.
Let's explore some of those layers further by looking at specific villages known for their historical or archaeological importance. This sounds really interesting.
It definitely is. We mentioned Ain Dara already, but it deserves a closer look. That Syro-Hittite temple complex, 1300 to 740 BC, it's remarkable.
The scale of it. And those giant footprints.
Yeah, massive carved footprints in the stone, plus sculptures of lions, sphinxes. It's quite something. The whole tell, the mound, shows occupation from the Chalcolithic way up to the Ottoman period.
Any idea who the temple was dedicated to?
The thinking is possibly Ishtar or Astarte or maybe Baal Hadad, major deities of the ancient Near East. Before 2010, it was a significant tourist draw because of this history.
And there was a stele found nearby, too.
Yes, the Ain Dara stele. Luwian inscriptions, probably 9th or 8th century BC, adds another layer of importance.
Just incredible to think of that ancient world existing alongside the villages we've been discussing. What about Cyrus or Nabi Hori?
Cyrus was another key site. It was a major Roman military base, strategically placed overlooking the Afrin River, part of Roman Syria in a region called Cyrestica.
Military, then.
Initially, yes. But later, by the 4th century AD, it became an important Christian center, even had its own bishop, like Jindyres eventually did, a common trajectory for Roman sites.
Okay. And then these dead cities, Barad is mentioned, sounds evocative.
The dead city's name is maybe a bit dramatic. It refers to the ancient villages of northern Syria, which is actually a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Oh, okay.
And Barad, ancient Copper Barada, is one of the best preserved examples. These villages flourished mainly in the late Roman and Byzantine periods, say, 1st to 7th centuries AD.
What's preserved there?
Amazing limestone architecture, houses, churches, public buildings, and significantly, olive presses. Lots of them.
Olive presses, again, that really points to how long olives have been important here.
Absolutely. It confirms this wasn't just a recent thing. It's ancient. While Barad itself is just outside the modern Afrin district boundaries, several other dead cities are within or very close by.
Like which ones?
Places like Basufan, Burj Haidar, Deir Seman, Kaloda, Karab Shams, Kafr Nabu. Some of these fall within the Afrin subdistrict. They all tell a similar story of prosperity linked in part to olive oil.
So olives are deeply, deeply rooted in the region's past. Are there other villages with specific historical layers worth noting?
Well, Jindyres in Chinchinbaris is key. We mentioned Basufan before. It has a 5th century church, but was also historically a Yazidi settlement. That mix is interesting. Kibar is another fascinating one. Site of a Byzantine-Arab battle, mentioned by the 13th century geographer Yaqut al-Hamawi. And it was a major Yazidi center, home to the Darwish clan.
And Raho.
Raho's connection to the Baghdad Railway in 1912 is historically significant. That would have impacted the trade and connectivity for the whole area.
Sure.
Plus, many other villages have documented historical houses, tombs, places like Topuli Mehmud, Mararate, Bourbonnais. They offer glimpses into more recent social and architectural history.
It really does sound like every corner had its own story. Let's shift focus now to the people themselves, the ethno-religious makeup of the villages before 2010. We know it was mainly Kurdish, but let's explore the diversity.
Right. Overwhelmingly Kurdish is the main point, described often as homogeneously Kurdish, the least Arabized Kurdish area in Syria.
And the language?
Kurmanji Kurdish was dominant. Kurdish sources estimated the population was at least 97% Kurdish before 2010. That cultural resilience we talked about was very strong.
Okay. But within that, significant minority communities,
yeah.
The Yazidis, for instance. Yeah.
Yes, a very important community. Estimates vary, but perhaps 20,000 to 30,000. They follow an ancient, unique, monotheistic faith with pre-Zoroastrian roots.
And where were they mainly located?
Often clustered in the area between Afrin City and Mount Simeon. Their villages were frequently near sacred mountains or shrines, forming a kind of sacred geography.
Shrines were important then.
Hugely. Central to their religious practice and community identity. Kibar, as mentioned, was a key center for the Darwish clan, with important shrines like the Cave of Silmera.
Other key Yazidi villages?
Basufan, as we noted. Questel Shingdo had the shrine of Bars Katunia. The area around Angdara had the shrine of Hogar. And there were many others, Badi, Kimar, Iska, Shader, Gazawiya, Kafarjana, with multiple shrines. The list in the sources is quite extensive. It shows a landscape really imbued with their sacred sites.
The spiritual map laid over the physical one. What about the Alevi community? You mentioned Mabatli earlier.
Yes, the Mabatli subdistrict was the main heartland for Alevis in Afrin. They are also predominantly ethnically Kurdish.
And their background?
Many have historical links to Kurdish Alevis who fled the Dersim region in Turkey, particularly after the massacres in the 1930s.
So they share the Kurdish language and identity?
They speak Kurmanji, yes, and identify strongly as Kurds. But their religious practices are distinct. They don't follow Sharia law, for example, and emphasize gender equality in their religious ceremonies, the Sem. Women aren't required to wear headscarves.
So culturally Kurdish, but religiously distinct. Mabatli town was their center.
Mabatli town was the administrative center of that subdistrict. And it's interesting, Mamatli and several nearby subdistricts were noted as having almost exclusively Kurdish place names, reflecting that strong overall Kurdish identity, which included the Alevis.
Okay. and Christians. A smaller community, you said?
Yes, smaller but historic. Maybe around 1,200 people, 250 families in the late 90s or early 2000s.
Where were they concentrated?
Mainly in the towns. Afrin City had the Church of the Good Shepherd, Rajo Town had a church, and Mabatli Town also had a small church community.
Any specific Christian sites?
The Kazikli Shrine on Kwazakli Mountain seems to have been significant. It's in an ancient cemetery that even has Greek monuments, suggesting a very long Christian history in the vicinity.
Fascinating. Finally, the Arab and Turkmen minorities. Quite small percentages.
Very small, yes. Arabs maybe around 1%. Arabs and Turkmens together perhaps 3%, according to late 90s estimates.
What were their origins in Afrin?
Diverse. Some were state employees, some benefited from land reforms, others were displaced from the Iskenderun Hatay area when Turkey annexed it. Specific tribes are mentioned, like Amarat and Ajil.
Did they live separately?
Often in mixed villages alongside Kurds. Places like Basuta, Bablet, Kakabay, Telhamo are mentioned. Meryemin village specifically noted as having both Arab and Turkmen residents.
Any other Arab presence?
Some families apparently came seasonally from nearby areas like Darat Azza for grazing or farming, sometimes living temporarily in Kurdish villages.
So present, but definitely small minorities within the overwhelmingly Kurdish district.
Exactly. They were part of the pre-2010 social fabric, but numerically small.
It really does create a picture of a complex tapestry, even with one dominant thread. Let's move to the economy now. Which villages were particularly important economically before 2010? Olives, obviously, were huge.
Huge is an understatement. Olive cultivation was the absolute backbone of Afrin's economy. It was more than just agriculture. It was deeply tied to cultural identity. The olive tree was the symbol of Afrin.
And the scale. Millions of trees.
That figure of over 15 million trees, often cited later, reflects the historical scale. The hilly Kurda landscape was just perfect for olive groves.
And the connection to Aleppo soap.
Crucial. Afrin was historically a major, maybe the major, supplier of olive oil for Aleppo's famous soap industry. That's an ancient link.
So most villages were involved.
Pretty much all rural settlements were involved in growing olives or the initial processing. Afrin City and the sub-district centers were where the pressing and trade really happened.
It must have required a lot of know-how.
Oh, definitely. Specialized knowledge passed down through generations. The entire rural economy really depended heavily on the success of the olive harvest each year.
And the trade routes. Mainly to Aleppo.
Primarily to Aleppo, yes. Afrin oil had a reputation for quality. And through Aleppo soap, potentially links to international markets, even if indirectly.
So olives were king. What else was grown? Was it purely olives?
No, not purely. Wheat was also very important. And in the fertile plains, the river valley areas, you'd find more diverse crops.
Such as?
Grains, summer vegetables, cotton, sugar beets, watermelons, often irrigated. In places like Shiroa sub-district, the pattern was wheat, barley, lentils, figs, grapes, alongside the olives.
So a mixed farming system.
Yes, providing food for locals, but also crops for the market. It offered some economic resilience beyond just the olive crop.
How did all this produce move around? Which villages were key market centers?
Well, Afrin City itself, having started as a market, remained the main economic hub. It connected the region's output, especially olive oil, to Aleppo.
And the sub-district centers.
They acted as secondary market towns for their surrounding villages. Places like Bulbul, Jindars, Raho, Mabatli facilitating local trade.
And Raho had that railway connection.
Right. The Baghdad railway connection from 1912 gave Raho a particular historical significance in terms of wider trade networks.
What about trade with Turkey? Given the proximity.
That cross-border trade was also vital, not just for Afrin, but other northern Kurdish areas too. Movement of food, goods, it was a crucial lifeline.
So looking both inward to Aleppo and outward across the border.
A deal orientation, definitely.
Were there villages known for specific crafts beyond processing olives?
The link to Aleppo soap is the most prominent craft connection, tying olive-producing villages to that industry. There's also evidence of a pre-existing textile capacity.
Textiles, before 2010.
While the industry boomed after 2011 due to displacement from Aleppo, reports from early 2016 mentioned hundreds of workshops employing thousands, mainly making jeans. That suggests underlying skills in weaving and tailoring must have been present before the major conflict began. It didn't just appear overnight.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady's here. Roj Bosh, Anna.
Ah, perfect timing. Let's see how the chai is today.
Sound of sipping. Perfect blend of sweet and spice today. Really hit the spot.
Agreed. Nicely balanced. Short pause.
Okay, feeling refreshed. Let's get back to our exploration. We were just about to discuss this gazetteer of populated places that your research has compiled. It sounds like a valuable resource for understanding the district in detail.
It is, or at least it aims to be. The idea was to gather a comprehensive list of the villages and towns in Afrin District as they were known before 2010.
How is it compiled? What sources?
It drew on several things. Syrian census data, crucially the 2004 census, local historical sources and community websites like LochmanAfrin.com, which is mentioned, academic studies, and public sources like Wikipedia for cross-referencing.
And a key feature is listing both the official names and the Kurdish names.
Absolutely. Well, vital. It includes the official, often Arabized, administrative names alongside the original Kurdish names used by the local population.
Why is that so important?
Well, it reflects the reality on the ground, the linguistic landscape. It's also a form of historical recovery, acknowledging the Kurdish heritage against the backdrop of those Arabization policies we discussed. It highlights the persistence of local identity.
So the gazetteer itself tells a story about cultural politics?
In a way, yes. The very need to list dual names speaks volumes. It's organized by the 7 sub-districts to make it manageable.
Can you give us a sense of what it contains without reading the whole lists? For example, in the Afrin subdistrict.
Sure. For Afrin subdistrict, you'd find Afrin city itself, of course. Then significant villages like Ain Dara, listed with its historical importance. Basufan, noting the Yazidi past in the church. Perhaps Barad nearby, as part of the dead city's context. Also, places like Kibar, Yazidi Center, and Taranda are listed. And many, many others with their dual names and 2004 population figures were available.
And for another subdistrict, say, Mabatli.
For Mabatli, it would list Mabatli town as the center, note its significance for the Aleva community. Then villages like Abrez, Sinka, noting its Yazidi shrine as well, and dozens more, again with populations and Kurdish Arabic names like Merkan Merka or Ashkan Sharki Askarojulat. The full lists in the source materials are very detailed for each of the 7 sub-districts.
It sounds like an incredible effort to document the human geography of the district at that specific time.
That was the intention, to create a snapshot based on the available data before the major upheavals.
Well, reflecting on everything we've discussed, what an intricate picture emerges of the Afrin district before 2010. It really wasn't just one thing, was it?
Not at all. It was this mosaic. You had layers of ancient history right alongside living communities with distinct cultures and religions, and everything deeply connected to the land, especially through those olive trees.
The resilience of the Kurdish identity really stands out.
It does, but also the unique traditions of the Yazidis and Alevis, that long-standing Christian presence, even the smaller Arab and Turkmen communities, they all added threads to the tapestry.
And the economy, so rooted in agriculture, but also connected outwards through trade, through crafts like the Aleppo soap link. It defined the rhythm of life for so many villages.
Yes, the agricultural cycle, the markets, the trade routes to Aleppo and across the border. It all shaped the character of the place. The dual village names, the mix of formal administration and local structures, it points to a really complex reality.
Thinking about all this depth and complexity we've uncovered, it certainly makes you consider how such a multifaceted place navigates change, internal pressures, external forces.
Exactly. Having this detailed picture of Afrin before 2010, based on your sources, provides such a valuable baseline. It helps understand the scale and nature of the transformations that have happened since. It's a reference point.
This exploration has really only scratched the surface, I feel, of everything contained in your research materials.
There's always more detail, more nuances to explore.
But hopefully for you listening, this has provided a clearer, maybe more textured understanding of the Afrin district as it was before 2010. Perhaps it sparked some curiosity to look even further into these incredibly important historical and cultural stories.
We hope so. It's a region with a profound history and a rich cultural heritage that deserves careful attention.